Funny anecdotes about co-education. I remember once getting a letter. I could probably blackmail half the Alumni Association because I've saved a lot of these letters. I have access to them. But it was a letter from a Houston attorney, and he just was so opposed, and he flatly stated in his letter that all women are liars and cheats. He signed the letter. And then there was a P.S. My secretary just quit. I'll never forget it. My secretary just quit. I loved it. So there were lots of funny things that were going on. We got a gift one time from a man who said, what did he say? It had something to do with the battered, he thought he would send his gift not to the Washley, but to the whatever it was in his hometown, Oklahoma, some kind of an organization for battered women, because it would do more for them than we were going to do for Washington. But we had a lot of interesting things come up. I was down in Pensacola, and I was working so hard. I'd spent all one afternoon trying to, on the plane going down there, writing my little remarks for the chapter meeting that night. At that time, this was the fall of 1985, so the women were coming in that fall. Now I'm down in late August. I'm in Pensacola, Florida, which is, we have a strong group of alums there. And I knew that 89% of them had a post-school education. All right, so we're at the home of the chapter president, and this absolutely adorable young woman walks in, who is going to be a freshman now. She's invited to the freshman reception. Well, before she walked in, though, I was pinned in the study by a couple of, as it turned out, rather elderly alums who were graduating the classes somewhere in the 30s. And one of them was particularly giving me a hard time about the decision and blah, blah, blah. And then this youngster walks in the door. Turns out that she is this guy's granddaughter. And he goes over and hugs her and carries on. I said, you so-and-so. I mean, how dare you give me the kind of grief you were giving me? Maybe not granddaughter, but there was a kinship there. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is what you're dealing with. But that night I made my remarks to the alumni group and welcomed the group and told them that this gal's name was Carol Couch. And we had one or two other male freshmen from the chapter, and I tried to envision the university 10 years from now and the kind of college and university that Carol would come back and support and so forth. I thought I was particularly good that night. And sometimes you know when you've really nailed it. Sometimes you're better than others, but in any event, when I finished, a couple of the older alums, I forget. Well, I do remember the name, but I won't give you the name. But anyway, one of them spoke up and said, well, and I can see him gathering himself up now. I guess, he said, if General Lee could forgive the North after the Civil War, I guess I can forgive Washington Lee for co-educating. And the other alum, who was his contemporary, said, well, I'm not the man that General Lee was. Tickle me. But you know, and we have situations where brothers disagree. I'm thinking of a particular alum, class of 37, who was very much in favor, and his younger brother, class of 39, who we just began to win him over. Just recently, just beginning to win him over. Heck, I think I'm just going to give you the names right here and now, because this may be a piece of history someday. We'll see what happens. Park Rouse, class of 1937, could not have been more supportive of co-education. Park wrote for the Newport News, and still does, guest columns and whatnot for the Newport News newspaper. Park really saw the light and was supportive. His brother, Randy, class of 39, lives in Washington, was unsupportive, to say the least. Randy also was unsupportive of the decision to drop big time football. So he's been mad before. But Randy Rouse used to give a party in at his home in Washington, D.C. for the freshmen every year. This was all going on during the 70s and early 80s. And it was a wonderful reception. He has a beautiful home on Wilson Boulevard in Arlington, and the swimming pool, and it's just a wonderful place to entertain a group. An impressive place to have a party for an incoming freshman. So as soon as the decision was rendered, that was the end of the Randy Rouse freshman reception. Okay, so I guess his last reception would have been the summer of 83 or 84, somewhere back there. Believe it or not, Maine, this past summer, Randy Rouse gave that reception for the first time in 12 years. He's made no gifts to the university during this period. He's one of my great cultivation cases, and maybe telling a story out of school, but for posterity purposes, if we ever get a major gift from Randy, I'm glad to tell the story of how we've been working on it. We took dead aim at Randy about maybe a year ago, and we thought, well, it's been all these years, he's never come back, then it's time for us now to do more to win him back. Pretty tough case when someone pushes that far away from the table and kind of a cease and desist, and I never want to see you again. I have the theory that we've got a little window of opportunity that's about to close now, but I thought that when John Elrod came in as president that the university had about 18 months, about a year and a half. There is an awful lot of animosity about John Wilson yet remaining in certain, in the minds of certain alumni, because John was the agent of change. John Elrod came to us after the decision was made. He was not part of that. And so I thought to myself, Rouse is one of the people on my list to see if we can get him back aboard now. He's a man that could do some enormous things here if he were so inclined. I had a meeting with an alumnus in Washington back in March or April, Jay Merriweather, who had been wonderful on the alumni board, chairman of the annual fund years ago, and was on my Washington campaign committee. And I said, Jay, you know Randy better than anybody. They steeplechase together, ride horses. Randy's a great question. I said, we've got to get Randy down here, and but we also just, it's time, and I'm thinking that we might just send a delegation of young alums to him and ask him to do that party. And Jay thought, well, that idea, but he said, but let me try it first on my own. So sure enough, Jay called me back and said, okay, he'll do it again. And this was a huge breakthrough. In a way, we kind of set it up, and this is a bizarre story, but one day I got a phone call from a youngster in Washington class of 84, and he said, would you call my father, who is a physician, a non-alum? He wants to tell you about Governor Endicott Peabody up in Massachusetts and wants you to give him a call. I said, all right. So I got the story, and it turns out that Governor Peabody also rides and has come to know Randy. Now, this governor in Massachusetts, much retired, is a graduate of Harvard. In fact, he was a Harvard All-American football player. His nickname was Chubb Peabody. Mike Walsh can't believe that I know or been in conversation and writing with Chubb Peabody, because Mike's a native of Massachusetts, knew all about him as a child and all, how a great governor he was, and served many years ago as the governor of Massachusetts. So I called Governor Peabody at the request of the fellow in Washington. And Peabody said, "Do you all realize what a great alum you've got in Randy Rouse?" I said, "Oh, yes, we know all about that." He said, "Do you have any idea how much he's worth?" I said, "Yeah, we have some idea that he's a very wealthy man. Owns a lot of real estate in Northern Virginia." He said, "Well, I was with him the other day, and I asked him what he was doing for Washlay, just because I assumed that he was a big supporter, and I discovered that he doesn't give me anything." And I said, "Well, unfortunately, that's the case. He's mad at us and has been for 12 years. And Peabody said, "Well, maybe I can help you." And so he and I were talking about, and I said, "Your name is kind of interesting to me. You know, there was a great Peabody who supported General Lee way back." He said, "Yeah, he's probably my forebear." Well, thanks to Barbara Brown and the good people over here at the University Library, I dug in over here, and they got some wonderful correspondence. They got the letter that George Peabody wrote to General Lee. So I got the Xerox of the letter and sent it to Governor Peabody. It just so happened he was going to a big family reunion of all the Peabody clan. He was elated. And I found the book that Dr. Gaines had written about the early benefactors of Washington Lee. And George Peabody made one of the great gifts that occurred during the Lee presidency. So here was all this wonderful thing about the Peabody name and how revered it was at this little southern college. And so now I've made a friend twice over. Well, Peabody took all of this information that I had sent to him, didn't identify that it had come from here, and sent it to his friend, Randy Rouse. Well, Randy was fascinated to read it, and sent it to his brother Park down in Newport News Register. Park thought it was fascinating and sent it to Ferris Hodgkins. Ferris brought it up to me. And I said, "Oh, Ferris, I'm the guy that started this thing."
The circle has been completed.
Oh, the web we weave, you know. So I said, "Ferris, what's going on here is I am determined to win Randy Rouse's favor over, getting back. And I'm using the good offices of this wonderful former governor in Massachusetts who's helping me with him." And so anyway, we had that started. That was all going on in the early summer before Jay Meriwether popped the question. So when Jay Meriwether popped the question, we had this thing at work, and then he said yes. All right, so the night we go up to the reception in Washington, I call Bill Washburn, and Bill was class of 40, Randy's 39. And I said, "I want to make a statement. I want two former alumni secretaries. They're not going to say anything, but he knows who I am, and he certainly knows you from college days, and he knows you were alumni secretary for 25 years. If we can get Jimmy Farrell, we'll take him." So Jimmy couldn't go, but Bill Washington and Libby and Sally and I drove up, and we just wanted to sort of make that statement that when he gave that party, that his university was fully proud and glad to have him back in the fold, so to speak. So that night, I kind of worked the party a little bit with the younger crowd, as I always do. I spend a lot of time with the kids, both because I like it, and because I'm trying to cultivate the future. But we had some great kids there that night, one of whom I remember was Leslie Ratz, who graduated just 2 years ago. Her father was the chairman of the Parents Annual Fund. Cute kid from Houston. And I got several of the gals that night to go up and talk to the Rouses. Now, Randy's married to a woman much, much younger than he, a second marriage, and she's an equestrian, and so I'm trying to get them down here to see the Virginia Horse Center and do some stuff. But anyway, they just thought, Leslie Ratz said, "That's the cutest man I've ever seen. He's up in his years now." And these kids charmed him, and I had a succession of just making a beeline all night long. Well, after the party, somebody said, "You know, in the old days, Randy would come make an appearance and leave the party. He never left this part. He was there till midnight. It went on and on and on. Apparently, I left at 8:30 or 9 because it was a 6 to 8 reception. But they said that Randy stayed all night with the kids and had a good time. Now, to bring the story a little bit more close to the full circle, John Falk, the president of the chapter, when he called me and gave me the great accolade that somebody said that the event at the Supreme Court was not unlike the Swiss Embassy Party. He said, incidentally, to further make your day, I just want you to know that Randy Rouse came to the party. So that's the second time now we've got something going.
Right.
So we'll see where it goes. I'm now I got to figure out what the next move is, but we think that we're beginning to make some headway. So some of these cases that are dug in can, I think, be turned around if you just work at it and let Mother Nature, and time is a great healer. So people sometimes wonder what you do for a living, and that's the kind of, I get more charge and more pleasure out of something like that than I can just about say about anything. That plus, I'm not quite as in touch with the student body as I once was. I love to be closer to the students. Again, because the students become alumni.
I got to be friends with Richard Weaver, and he said, mm-hmm. You know what we are? We're alumni and resident.
Well, that was the whole theory behind Capricorn.
Well, it works. It works.
I was flying. It was the first time I was in the job, I was flying between San Diego and San Francisco, and I looked out the window of that airplane. I looked down on the California coastline, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. I had made a talk. It was my first alumni meeting, was in San Diego, and I had made a little talk to 60 people. I was going to go up to San Francisco and make a talk that night to the San Francisco alumni, and there'd be about 7,500 people at the meeting. And I thought to myself, you know, I looked out the window and it all just became clear. I can spend the rest of my life as alumni secretary flying around the country and making presentations to 50 to 100 or 200 alumni. But in Lexington, Virginia, there are 1,500 of them. That's where I'm going to put a major investment in my time in the alumni office. That's the crowd. Get my arms around them, because once the horse has bolted the barn door, either as a development officer, and I came into the alumni job from the development experience. So that was useful, not only the Williamsburg experience, but the pure W&L development experience. But I knew what my mandate was when I walked in. I knew in my own heart what I had to do, which was to make them love you before they leave. Not that they don't, but teach them in ways that I thought I uniquely might be able to try what it means to be an alum in the support category. So the first thing I thought of was, well, I'm going to form an elite group. Not too elite, don't want to be elitist, but I'm going to grab some kids who are leaders and get them involved doing that which is meet and write. And I remember Buddy Atkins and I went to the classics department and said, we'd like a name for this group. We don't want to call it the Student Alumni Association. It's an alumni in residence idea, and we want y'all to come up. So I guess it was Herman Taylor and maybe Mario Pellicero and others, they scratched their head. Harry Pemberton might have gotten involved. And they came up with this phrase, Cathicon, which, or toe Cathicon, and what it means, the literal translation of that Greek word is to do that which is meet and right, to do one's duty in the sense that General Lee would have thought of, noblesse oblige, kind of. And I think probably if some people think that the Washington Society is one of the great contributions I've made around here, but in my own heart, I'll always think it's Gattaca. Washington Society is another interesting development that came along as my way of trying to keep good people involved forever. Once you serve 4 years on the alumni board, you know, you go off to your pastor and all this information, all this, in a sense, training, all this involvement is lost. A few of them will maybe make it up to the Board of Trustees, but we created a vehicle to keep them coming back once a year for life. And it got to be so successful and so useful to us in the campaign. And I'm very proud that some members of the Board of Trustees and some members of the Law Council said we would like to be part of that. So now we have 121 former trustees, former Law Council members, former Alumni Board members who meet once a year and are involved in this little organization called the Washington Society. And it's no mistake that you can get people in there who do things like Peter Agelasto and Dan Balfour and Park Rouse. Our whole 250 program is being the stalking horse for it, really, is their little publication on George Washington's gift, which will be out later this month.
Well, I'm glad you explained the origins of the Washington Society, mm-hmm. because I've heard about it, and it's obviously the cool people are in it,
no.
I never knew how it got started.
No, we make them want to be in. The only requirement, having served on one of these boards, is that they have to write a letter and say, I want to be in. We don't just wipe them in and say, okay, you're now in this group. I require a statement that they want to be in.
Oh, that's interesting.
I'm looking for some commitment. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't have to promise if they're going to come to every meeting or anything, but it's not just an automatic wave in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like I've taken up your entire morning, which I have.
I just realized I've got a noon lunch.
Oh, you're going to run out the door on me.
Yeah.
All right. Well, is there anything you want to say as we wrap this up?
It's been a pleasure, man.
Because there's about three other things we didn't get to on my list, but
we'll talk again someday. Because
right.
Obviously I can talk forever, and I might get a horse along the line. But yeah, this place means the world to me. I thank my lucky stars, and then every day I walk across this campus, I pinch myself that I'm lucky enough to work here. And I guess the truth be known, I might complain about myself. But in point of fact, I should pay this university to work here because it's a love of my life, and I hope it shows. I think it does show. And the enthusiasm I have in this place never wanes. And that's what makes up for the deficiencies I have in so many other ways. Your other weaknesses are my credibility, I think, is such among alumni that because I spend as much time with the little people as I do the major donor types, when I go on alumni, when I go to cities for pure development reasons, in addition to the heavy hitters that I must, after all, pay attention to because that's where the money is, I'm mindful of building the relationship that will produce when these kids get to be 60 and 70 years old, and when their time is coming. Maybe they'll remember someone who paid attention to them when they were 27. So that's my motivation. And you need people like that who are nurturers, and that's the role I guess I try to play.
Thank you, Dick.
What a great speech.
It's been a pleasure.